and welcome to PICC Lounge podcast, where patient voices drive real change in healthcare. Here we explore how patients, healthcare professionals, and innovators work together to shape a more inclusive and patient-focused future. Get ready for inspiring conversations, bold ideas, and real-world solutions. Let's dive in from our lounge to your world. Welcome to this episode of where we are exploring patients' engagement and what it means, why it's important, and how it can make a difference in both treatments and quality of life. And we look at what barriers patients often face and how we can create them in a more exclusive processes. And today we have Vera Gomez joining us, and thank you so much, Vera, for joining us in our podcast. So I would like to maybe you can introduce yourself short.
Thank you so much for having me. So my name is Vera Gomez. I'm a patient advocate for inflammatory bowel diseases and also the president for NGO for people with this disease in Portugal. And I'm patient advocate and patient expert for almost 10 years in this area. So it's been quite a journey, and very happy to share also some thoughts about it and all the ups and downs in the patient advocacy and patient engagement journey with all of you.
Oh, thank you. Oh, let's dig deep, because I've been waiting for this and I'm so much looking forward to it. So my first question will be, what does patient engagement mean in practice for you?
Well, I think patient engagement is more than just showing up for the doctor appointment. It's about being actively involved in the decisions and all the decisions related to your health. So not only inside the medical office, but also at your exams and your treatments, etc. So it really means being actively involved in anything that is linked to your health. It means also that you have to also understand your condition. You need to ask questions. You need to explore treatment options. And it is also important that you also have a voice in the choices that will affect your well-being. In practical terms, this could be as simple as patient tracking their symptoms and sharing data with their doctor, for example, or as complex as co-designing healthcare policies with providers, with policymakers, with researchers. So it's really a shift from a passive, the doctor knows it best, and I'm a statue, so everyone looks at me, everyone has opinion about me, but nobody actually asks me what I want or what is my option that I prefer. And we move towards an approach that is really about a collaborative partnership where patients feel heard, informed, and above all, this also feel empowered to make decisions that fit their unique needs. There's no two human beings that are the same. So we all have different needs, and it's all about making sure that the decisions that are taken, they fit everyone and every individual needs.
Oh, I love that. I really love that you're highlighting that it's also a way of patients to actually integrate with themselves and more than that. So thank you for that, Vera. How do you see the difference between patient involvement and patient engagement in general? If you need to make some kind of comment on that, that would be really great.
In my opinion, the two are connected, but not exactly the same thing. And I think there's a very important distinction. Patient involvement for me is more about consultation. It's when, for example, you provide a feedback for share your experience to help shape healthcare services. You get a survey, for example, you reply to the survey, you know, the healthcare provider ticks a box and voila, we heard the patient. And that for me is patient involvement. It is valuable, indeed. It's it is important also to have collect these feedbacks, but the decision making doesn't remain or doesn't involve the patient. You see, it's just, again, we look, we hear, we have an opinion, we collect your thoughts. Most of the times you don't even get the feedback of what you replied. And the decision making power is somewhere else, with someone else. With patient engagement, here it goes deeper for me. And here it's about patients being active partners in their care, is having access to the information they need, is also playing a role in the decision making. And this is, for me, the most game changer between patient involvement and patient engagement. So instead of just being consulted, patients are actually co-pilots in their healthcare journey. For example, rather than just filling the form, like I said, about the hospital experience, patient engagement would go a bit further, and patient might collaborate with the healthcare provider to redesign how the healthcare is delivered. I hope you understand a bit the difference. One thing is, I just collect your feedback. How do you feel about what do you think needs to be changed? And the other thing is, you bring the patient to the table. He expresses his opinion, but he helps also the healthcare provider to do the improvements and to make the decisions on how we can improve our healthcare. And this is, for me, the major difference between patient involvement and patient engagement.
Oh, thank you. I think it was a very good explanation on that. If I'm taking it a bit further, I would like to hear you. What is the difference between patient involvement and patient engagement if you're taking it as a patient advocate?
For me, as patient advocates, I advocate for people, not just for myself, but also for others with my condition. And there I can have double roles. I can be a patient involved in some action, or I can be a patient engaged in some action, but I work more as an ambassador. You see, I speak for those that, for example, with my disease, they do not have the privilege to feel comfortable enough to speak about it. So I speak for myself in my healthcare and with my network of my healthcare providers, my health professionals. I advocate for my care, the best care. I want to be involved in the decision making. But to the outside world and outside the medical office, I advocate for others like me to have better conditions. And that means also raising awareness about the disease, is being an ambassador of people of my disease. That, again, I am very privileged. I have a stable professional career. I'm financially having a stable life. I have a very good support network that allows me to be a patient advocate for me and others, but others do not have that privilege. And they are afraid that because they speak out about their condition and they start advocating, that they might lose their job, or they are more worried in just navigating through the difficulties of the disease and life and put food on the table. And so they don't have the energy or the resources to dedicate themselves as patient advocates. I hope I replied to your question.
Oh, you did so much. And thank you for that, because I think that's a step further than in what engagement and involvement can mean. So I wanted to hear what different can it make to patients' care and quality of life to actually be involved and engage?
Well, I think there's one aspect, and this is recurrent, for example, with people with my disease, but I think it's common to anyone who has chronic conditions, especially when you are diagnosed extremely young, because you're not supposed to have a condition for the rest of your life, for example. And so once you start feeling better, you tend to drop out of your treatments. And this is a very specific example that pops up to my mind, because this is actually, I'm having lately numerous discussions on how we can help this. But then it's very funny, because we continue to have the patients statue. So we talk about them, we think that is what is best for them, but we actually don't ask them why this is happening and what we can do different, what information they need. And that also shows that and with this very concrete example, that the impact of patient engagement can be very profound, because you do have studies that show that when patients are engaged, they also experience better health outcomes, and they also adhere more closely to their treatment plans. They don't drop out that easily from their treatment plans, because they also are very aware and they feel empowered to understand and make very well-informed decisions. And of course, this also implies, you know, lower rates on hospital readmission, because if you keep your treatment, then you will not decompensate and then you don't need to go again to the hospital. But this, beyond the clinical benefits, it's also very important that the patient being engaged in the decision-making of his healthcare, it also leads to a stronger sense of control and confidence in managing one's health. So picking up again the example, you get diagnosed very young age, for example, it's like you feel like the floor is opening and you're going inside a hole. Everything, all your life is suddenly is completely different and changes. And you crave for the sense that you are still able to control something. And as in the healthcare providers, we keep having this statue-patient relationship that you need to do as you're told without even further explanation or involving them in the decision-making. Patients just go to look for control somewhere else. And usually that tends to not go very well, because that also makes patients more vulnerable to quacks. And so if you imagine a patient that is actively engaged, imagine diabetes, for example. That is a very easy one. Imagine a patient with diabetes. They can track their blood sugar. They can adjust their diet based on what they have learned. They can work closely with a doctor to tweak the medications if needed. It gives them a sense of empowerment and control that, yes, I have diabetes, but I'm still able to do outside a medical office management decisions that provides you a sense of empowerment, control, independence also, that you're not a hostage from your disease. And if you compare that with the person that passively follows the instructions they get in the medical office without, you know, understanding fully what is their condition, who is going to be more stable in the end? Who is going to be even mentally more stable? In the end, is it going to be the one that is actually monitoring his disease, tracking his systems and making better adjustments in their daily life outside the office, or the one that is a hostage of the healthcare provider because he will all constantly contact the healthcare provider, and then the healthcare provider at a certain moment, because he's also, you know, he doesn't have just one patient sometimes. I know doctors that they follow more than 1,000 patients, for example. They are so overwhelmed that they will not pay attention, or they cannot be as available as the patient would need. So I think we also need to think about patient engagement a bit also beyond the individual benefits that I just tried to illustrate and explain, because I also think that improves the healthcare system as a whole. So if patients are involved, they can help create the services. They are more, you know, the services become more patient-centered. This leads, of course, to better communication. This leads also to greater trust in the healthcare providers. And this will absolutely lead also to cost savings for the healthcare systems, because you will reduce unnecessary treatments, unnecessary hospitalizations. I think it's really a win-win situation for everyone involved in the equation: the patient, the healthcare providers, the healthcare system, the policymakers, you know, the governments, the state that needs always to make the decision, financial decision on where we are going to put our money. And sometimes the feeling that I have is that we focus a lot in short-term solutions instead of thinking in a more strategic way and in the long run. But I still believe that everyone wins when we are talking about patient engagement and the difference that it can make in the patient care in general and in the quality of life of the patient itself.
Thank you, Vera. That was a very, very good explanation. And thank you for really clarifying the idea of what care and quality of life actually can do together. So thank you. I have one question more, and that is, with your own words, what barrier do patients face when they want to be involved?
I'm smiling because it's like I could spend the day talking about this. yeah, because this is actually something that even in my organization, we are trying to fight a bit, you know. But I will try to provide you maybe just a few examples, and then if you want, I can elaborate a bit more. Because there exist barriers, and one of them starts with lack of clear and accessible information. The information that exists is full of medical jargon, complex healthcare systems, you know, that nobody understands. This makes it extremely difficult for patients to understand their options, understand their rights. It's honestly a nightmare. And if you want a very concrete example of this, think about clinical trials, for example, and informed consent. I don't know how is your experience, but the last time I participated in one, the consent form was 11 pages. I don't consider myself the most intelligent person in the world, but I still consider myself a little bit literate in healthcare and on the systems. And after one page, my brain was exploding because there was so many words meaning so many different things. And I was like, but what this really entails? The wording that is used, the lack of accessibility, and not only about lack of accessibility in the terms of the clarity of the language, but if you think about people with certain types of disability, the information is not accessible to them at all. And then it becomes extremely difficult for them to grasp and to understand rights and options of treatment, for example. This is insane. Then there's the question of the time constraints. I was just saying about that I know some doctors with more than 1,000 patients under their care. This means that, you know, the medical appointments are timed. It's like you have 15, 20 minutes and that's it. And this, of course, sometimes doesn't help to have the time for meaningful discussions or even questions that patients might have. And this sometimes also leaves that even the doctor himself is not able to fully cover all the aspects. He needs to prioritize what he's going to address in that medical appointment, where he's going to focus his attention, instead of actually providing a full holistic medical appointment, you know, to the patient and to discuss with him all the different things. Then we also live in a world that, whether we not want it or not, it's global. And we cannot forget, I don't live in the country where I was born, so I face this also in first hand, that is the cultural and the language barriers. So for example, I remember I speak English and French, but when I arrived to this country, my French was very limited, and in the when if I needed to talk to a nurse or to make a medical appointment, it needed to be in French. With my doctor, I could speak in English, but it's still not my mother tongue. So sometimes even for you to express yourself is very difficult. So when you have all this scenario, a lot of patients feel intimidated or excluded because of these differences in languages, in the culture, and even on the social economic status. And then there's the question of the power dynamics. I would like to finish with this one, because, you know, traditional healthcare models can really make patients feel like they should follow instructions without questioning them. And this discourages any possible active participation. The example that I was giving, that, you know, this illustration that patient is a statue. Everyone has an opinion, knows what is best, and he just needs to follow without even questioning or asking questions. Patients feel that they are not allowed to ask questions to the doctor in the appointment because you cannot question the doctor. And you feel like the doctor has the, in Portuguese, we have an expression that you feel like the doctor has the cheese and the knife on his hand and you have nothing. So you need to follow blindly this. And this is an aspect that I think also needs to change. And to change, we will need a cultural shift in the healthcare, where the providers encourage open conversations, you know, that where accessible education is provided, where an healthcare system, an ecosystem where you recognize the patient experience in their own experience. They live with the disease or with a medical condition 24/7. There's nothing you can read in the books that makes you know much more than the patient's own experience of living with it 24/7. And with this, I'm not saying that the patient is going to substitute an healthcare professional. I'm just saying that the patient's own experience, living with it daily, has a much broader perspective that you cannot learn it in books. By living it, you learn much more. And then there's also the question of the digital health tools. We talk about more and more these days about digital health tools, but they can be a solution and they can be a barrier. Not everyone is digital literate to use the tools. But if you start using them more and educating also patients more, especially the ones with more difficulties to how to use them, that should also improve and help. The another cultural shift that we will need is precisely the shared decision making practice. This doesn't exist. And we will need, of course, patient advocacy initiatives to play a role in breaking down all these obstacles. And making the engagement the standard and not an exception. And I think me as patient advocate and others, this is a bit what we are trying to make others to understand. We are not the enemy. We actually can participate and help. You cannot talk about patient-centered healthcare when we are not sitting at the table also and also participating in the discussion. And this, for me, is a point that there's still a lot of work to do for all of us.
Thank you. You are right in my heart. I think that all the barriers that you're mentioning, and as you said, you can talk about it all day. But I'm glad for your very concrete and very simple answer. So thank you for that. I will end our questionnaires here with three very personal topics, because I think that some of the things is always nice to have these podcasts ending with something funny. And the first one is, what is your favorite song?
Okay, just for disclosure, I got these three questions yesterday evening and it was not easy because... Two of them were not easy. There was one that was extremely easy for me, actually. And this one was not easy because depends also a lot on the mood that I am. And at the same time, I would like to share a song that is a bit more international, not some song that you cannot understand the lyrics. But then I was thinking that, where I live, the weather is constantly gray and dark and not very good. And I thought about the musics that I was... that would cheer me up when I was hospitalized. And there's one from a Spanish singer called Bebe. And the name of the song is Ella. And it's a story of a woman that is, going through a very rough moment. And she puts, this is a part of the lyric that says that she puts her red lipstick and she puts on high heel shoes just to make her steps be heard. And I think it's a bit what we are trying to do with patient advocacy, right? We are just putting our heels on and trying to make ourselves be heard. So I would say that's a good song for this podcast.
Yes, it is really a good song. Oh, I love that. And that's actually a good way of describing it. So I definitely need to find that song. So then I have a question about what is your favorite dish?
Yeah, this one is very difficult. I must say, this is very difficult. And I mean, thinking about it. You know why? Because the irony on all of this, it's that for a person that has an inflammatory bowel disease and a lot of gastric problems, I like eating too much. You know, I'm not picky, except if it is like some spices that I really cannot tolerate because I will get extremely sick. I'm not picky. It's like I eat whatever I can get my teeth on, I must admit. But I do have a tradition on Friday evenings that my husband jokes with me because usually on Friday we try to have a real more relaxed informal relaxed dinner, you know, like seeing a silly movie or something. And there always needs to have guacamole. I always need to have guacamole on Friday evenings. And if I don't have guacamole on Friday evenings, it doesn't even feel the same.
So your favorite dish is guacamole at the moment.
On Friday evenings, yes.
On Friday evening. Okay. That's a good question. I actually thought that would be an easy question, but I can hear as your diseases area is always all picking in ways of your life that you didn't participate. So I think that's actually a good point you have here. So, and then I have the last one is what quote have inspired you or are inspiring you at the moment?
This is the easiest one because this one I even have it on my professional Skype as a tagline. I have a post-it on my screen, and this is I read it many years ago, and I really believe in it. And it's actually a quote from JF Kennedy, and it says, "One person can make a difference, and everyone should try."
Oh my God, that is very good, actually. Oh my
It's
God.
the I keep this quote in front. I have a post-it in my screen. I have it in my office. Because I really believe in this. It's like I will not change the world, but I can at least try, because by trying it, I will make someone else's world better.
I think it's a lovely quote. Thank you for that. And Vera, thank you so much for participating in this first episode of Patient Engagement.
Thank you very much for joining us. If you enjoyed today's conversation, remember to subscribe, share this episode, and follow us on PICC United. Until next time, stay curious, stay connected, and remember, your voice can change the future in healthcare. See you soon on the PICC Lounge podcast.